All right, we'll go ahead and get started with our afternoon program. I think we may have some stragglers, but one of the other topics that came up was what was going on in the insurance market. Several of the privately owned companies talked to me about what they've seen in terms of pressure on the insurance costs or on their coverage or on the deductibles. So I thought this was a very applicable topic and asked Kevin Mershimer from the Horton Group, deep background in insurance and in the wood industry, not necessarily all just the mulch industry, but the wood industry. And I thought Kevin could give us some advice, explain what's happening and why and what we can do about it. I'll turn it over to Kevin.
Hopefully you're not going to hit the afternoon lull and go to sleep on me. Let's try to stay awake for this one. So one of the things we keep hearing is there's a lot of changes going on in the insurance market. It's not just in the lumber side, but obviously it's affecting yours as well. I want to talk today, just hit a few different topics. We'll talk about what's driving some of these changes, ways to reduce premiums, basically what you have control over, how to handle inspections, whether it's a loss control person or an underwriter, what they're looking for when they walk through your property, and kind of how to make your property stand out. I guess you have a paper on your desk. We'll be time at the end, but let's keep this kind of informal. If you have questions, just feel free to shout them out. Definitely make it interactive. And I'm going to move pretty fast. We only have an hour to do this, and I have a lot of slides. There'll be a lot of good information. And at the very end, it's on your website, so if you actually want this slide deck, you can pull it off the website. So you don't have to take 1,000 notes. Obviously, we always have our disclaimers, right? So check your agent before making any changes to your property for return on investment. And not everything I say is going to automatically reduce your premiums or have an impact on eligibility. And understand the next carrier may not value the same things we talk about today. So from carrier to carrier, they respect different things. Today's primarily talking about property, but understand the same types of ideas, that the approach is all going to work across workers' comp and auto and other coverages as well. So what are you seeing? Obviously, we're probably seeing deductibles changing, prices increasing a little bit, carriers exiting marketplaces, getting non-renewals, unexpected increases on buildings and contents values. Basically, it's when they automatically increase your values without you telling them to. Different loss control recommendations, things you've never seen before. And some of you may find yourselves with 5 or 6 different carriers, even on the property or across the various lines, just the way things are moving. So why? It's the vagaries of the market. It's cyclical. It's called the hard market. We're going into what they call a hard market. And for some industries, it's not always across the board, but primarily it's in hard-to-place risk. Plastic recyclers, wood products are the first two to ever get hit with the hard market. That's where they come across. And companies with very high values. So it's cyclical. Simply less carriers are interested in certain lines or occupancies, what we do. Losses drive a lot of these. The indicators on hard market is driven by large losses. And as we were talking about this morning, we had a lot of baby boomers that are retired over the last 5 years. So we have millennials and Xers coming in, and they have no experience in underwriting, no experience in different occupancies. So the specialization is kind of gone, and you have brand new people coming into marketing. So it's just, they're unexperienced. We also have cat losses that drive a lot of these hard market situations. Obviously, what's going on in Florida is going to have an impact on us. Going to have an impact on everybody. Normally a carrier takes all their premiums and they put it over here in the market and they make money on that. That's kind of how they make their money. A lot of them lose money on just pure underwriting. So they probably pay out more in claims than they take in, but they're making enough money over here in the market that it's okay. It's perfectly normal. The reality is when's it going to turn? When the market turns and they're no longer making money in the market, that's when they become a little hungry. So hopefully this will change the hard market and hopefully start swinging us back towards a soft market. By the way, if I use an acronym or a term you don't understand, just feel free to call me out on it. Insurance people love our acronyms. So what can you do? What do you have control over? There's no special word to this, stop losses. So a stop loss is when you take a limit on your property, the maximum carrier will pay out. So you can actually, today we're primarily gonna talk about rate and getting lower rates. Lower premiums are one thing, that's the overall goal, but we're really talking about getting a lower rate on the property or the auto. So a stop loss is nothing more than, let's just say you have $15 million worth of value. You can go to the carrier and say, I'll take a $5 million stop loss. Now you have to be smart about it. if you have five buildings that are separated by 100 feet or by a good distance, and the most you'll ever lose in one building is $4 million, a $5 million stop loss isn't a horrible thing. It's a good conversation to have with your agent if you have good spread of risk. You have to look at your largest potential loss. Deductible. You get to call your deductible. Now, sometimes they'll dictate how high your deductible is going to be, but you can choose a higher deductible. And you certainly don't want to pick a higher deductible if you're only going to save $1,000 a year. So we want to make sure we're making smart choices with our deductibles, and not just taking a higher deductible to save 12 bucks. We want to keep your business income adjusted with climate changes. Obviously, most of our businesses are seasonal, so they do have a seasonal endorsement you can put in your policy to cover your BI. That way you don't have to carry $3 million worth of BI the whole year, or at least make sure they're underwriting that appropriately. Look for association endorsement programs. Nate, is Nate here today? Nope, he's out. Nate was telling me about an association program in Michigan for workers' comp, and as long as you're a part of the association, he gets a dividend back every year. So look at different associations in your industry and see if there's something there where they have an insurance program, an endorsement program. Ask about monthly reporting on stock. Obviously, we all have piles of stock in the spring and not very much come wintertime, right? So you have seasonal fluctuations with mulch piles or stock. We don't want to pay on $4 million worth of stock when it's only in our yard for a short period of time, 2 months. So if you ask for a monthly reporting, you pay on the average of what you have throughout the year. So it's a good way to save yourself money by getting a monthly reporter for your stock. Does that make sense? Am I making any sense, Amon? Okay, good. You have the option to exclude things. You can exclude mulch, raw materials. You can exclude buildings. You can exclude equipment, logs, if you have a chipper. I saw a redwood chipper was here. You have the option to exclude some things. And you also maybe want to exclude obsolete equipment. So if you have equipment that you're no longer using, you don't want to insure it anyhow, you have to be specific about talking to the carrier, hey, I want to exclude that. Because when you have a loss, they're going to use it when they calculate your co-insurance penalty. Mobile equipment. Mobile equipment is one of those things that's a little bit different than everything else. It's on ACV, so actual cash value. So it's like a car. It depreciates every single year. It goes down in value. So you want to make sure those numbers are correct. And actually, those are actually keeping its value. They're keeping their value pretty well right now, mobile equipment. So being on the front end of new technology, obviously coming to trade shows. I saw there was a fire extinguisher guy, Rick was here. Staying on the front end of any kind of technology is a great thing. I'm going to try this and see if it works. Ready? There we go. It's not coming up, is it? All right, my abilities are limited. Thank you. So what you're going to see in a second is this called... it's not coming up on the screen.
No idea.
All right, okay. Can you get rid of it?
Yeah.
So anyhow, it's called Fire Rover. It's on the slide deck. If you want to pull it up, you'll be able to see how it works. But basically what it does is, if anybody's seen the movie Terminator, So he uses thermal imaging. And what it does, it looks over an area, and this is a pile of product that has a hot spot in it. The Fire Rover finds the hot spot and actually extinguishes it, shoots a chemical right on it. And also there's IMC, Industrial Monitoring and Control, and you can see it there. It actually looks for heat anomalies in mulch piles and sawdust piles and things like that. So being on the front end of technology is a great thing, especially when you're marketing your account and talk to underwriters. So some different ways to reduce our premiums overall on a short-term basis is really get involved in the process. This is really the owners, and just be involved. It's not just something you stick with your controller or your CFO. You want to make sure the owner's involved in this process. Don't just shop your program. Improve the risk. Build your insurance resume. We're going to go over what an insurance resume is and how to build one and what goes into it. really start looking at your property like an underwriter, and what an underwriter looks through when he walks through your property. And you'll kind of, after today, you'll kind of get a better view of what an underwriter looks for and go, hey, you know, I never really looked at it like that. And you'll see a lot of things as you walk through your property. Ask your agent and then ask your carrier what else you can do to lower your premiums. And we'll go through the different things you can do to talk to them and get lower rates. It's nice to look for an agent in your area that deals with the industry. They're going to know what players to work with, and they're going to know the recommendations, they're going to know the loss prevention people, they're going to know when you need to split certain things out and how to manage the risk. But somebody that does dry cleaners and grocery stores really has a hard time understanding your business, so it's nice to find somebody that knows what you do. And if it's your best friend, if it is somebody that you know really, really well from church, educate them very well on your business so they can explain it when they go to underwrite and talk to the underwriters. So again, talking about ask your underwriters or loss prevention people when they walk through the property. If you market your account and you have a loss control person walk through, even if it's not your current carrier, ask that person, hey, what do you see that we need to do different? Ask them the questions. Do a pre-renewal meeting. Whether you agree or disagree with any of the recommendations they give you when they're walking through your property, you always want to make sure that you're at least taking a note, acting like you're somewhat interested. Last thing you want to do is be obstinate about listening to their recommendations. You want to at least let them know that, hey, I'll write that down, I'll consider that. Discuss changes to your operation with your agent. If you're thinking about, I mean, how many people have pellet operations in their operation? Anybody do pellets? Okay, a few different people do pellets. If you start to do something completely contrary or different than what you do, your current carrier may not like that or may change the rating on it or may get off of it. So make sure you have those conversations before you up and change your occupancy. A lot of times, doing little things on a short-term basis will help you out with your renewals, especially if you're getting increases. So little things like maintaining your security fence, whether it's vegetation all over it, vegetation up against it. A lot of times a snowplow will run into it and knock it over. Kids will be jumping in over top of the barbed wire, knocking those down. You want to make sure the fence looks like you take it seriously. Damaged fascia boards, ripped up metal on your buildings. You just want to make sure your property looks nice for the visit. And we'll go into depth on this. Review your loss prevention reports. Make sure you understand what's been fixed, and make sure you have that written down. So when I walk through a property, I always ask for the last loss prevention report from the current carrier and have you fix those things. So it's a nice thing to have listed. Make sure you know your claims. Make sure you know what claims have happened, anything over $10,000, be able to explain, hey, here's what happened and here's what we did to make sure it doesn't happen again. Be able to ready to explain your losses. Capitalize on what you already have. So everybody has fire extinguishers, right? Does everybody do fire extinguisher training? Do you really look at where they are? Do your people really know how to use a fire extinguisher? Believe it or not, I do fire extinguisher training, and I'm always amazed with what people do and how they can't handle a fire extinguisher. You'd think everybody would just be ingrained in it, but it's not true. Maintain your fence, make sure your security lighting works, and upgrade your housekeeping. Again, short-term type things. Develop contingency plans. We're going to go in depth on that. Develop an emergency response plan and coordinate with the fire department. A lot of places will have an emergency response plan, but never communicate with the fire department. A lot of my companies will bring the fire department on site, do a tour of the property, feed them lunch, and just get to know them really well so they know the property. And we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about preparing for underwriter visits. I'm a big proponent of having a backup plan for your carrier. So your agent should have somebody in the lurch ready to go to take over your property in case your current carrier gets off your business. You want to be able to make a smooth transition to somebody else if you get canceled or non-renewed. Build some buyer equity with your carrier. This is not only just staying with the carrier, but responding to loss control recommendations, being engaged with them, having a communication with the underwriter. You are absolutely okay to call the underwriter. You're okay to actually have this communication with the underwriter. Build that relationship. This is truly a relationship industry. Make sure your agent is attuned to the players in the industry. Who writes our kind of operations? An appraisal. So an insurance appraisal does really four things for you. One is it makes sure, and this is an insurance appraisal, not a market appraisal. A market appraisal is what you could sell your property. These are numbers that you would use to set your values. So number one, it's going to make sure we're not overinsured or underinsured. It's going to give us what they call agreed amounts. It gets rid of coinsurance, so we won't get penalized in case of a loss. And then you can always change our, what they call coinsurance percentage, long story, but you can actually get a little bit of a lower rate after you do an appraisal. The biggest thing it does for you is when you have a loss, even in your homes, if you guys have a fire in your home, they're going to hand you a pad of paper and go, tell us everything you had in your house. And you're going to be traumatized over the loss. You're going to, you know, just, it's not a great time to try to come up with all that information. The appraisal is your proof of loss. You hand the disc to the adjuster and you're done. I had a claim, it was 1998, but I had a $30 million claim. It was settled in 30 days because the guy had an appraisal. Appraisals just make life a whole lot easier for you. And the fourth thing it does for you, whenever you do have to go out to the market, I mean, the whole goal of this, the whole goal of this presentation, the whole goal of what we're talking about is try to be in the top 5% of all businesses that you do, what you do. So when an insurance carrier looks at you, you go, wow, nobody else does this much stuff. Nobody else does this kind of thing to protect their property. And insurance appraisal is another way to do that. I use a group out of Pittsburgh called Industrial Appraisal, but there's lots of different styles out there. Really nice to be able to work with your town to improve your community mitigation class, your town class, your public protection class. There's a lot of different terms, the same thing. So in your area, you're either a town class 9, town class 6. You guys are familiar with that. You want to make sure that your city knows, you need to know what it is and see what they're willing to do to help make that better. Sometimes it's just bringing a hydrant within 500 feet of your property. Dry hydrants, they're nice. You see the thing on the white? It's just off of a pond. It's nice for the fire department to use. Not every carrier recognizes it, but it's a nice. You can't do everything just for the pure savings it's going to bring you. Sometimes you just need to do things because it's the right thing to do for your property, and that's one of them. Obviously, sprinkling your buildings is a long-term item, but a couple things it does for you. Immediately, it gives you a better rate. It gives you larger capacity. So some carriers can only write up to such a certain size operation. So if your property is over $10 million, there's a lot of carriers that can't write you because their limitations through their capacity is $10 million. Some are $5 million. So once you're sprinkled, it gives them larger capabilities for capacity. You're eligible to more carriers. We've got a carrier called Hanover Verlin. They only write sprinkled wood operations. If you're not sprinkled, they won't write you. So it just gives you an advantage that way. Long-term payback. All right, Kevin, what if I'm already sprinkled? What can I do? How can I get a better credit if I'm already sprinkled? You can ask your loss prevention person or your underwriter, hey, if I start doing monthly 2-inch drains, change out my 50-year-old heads, do interior pipe inspections, do my weekly fire pump test. There's a lot of things they can tell you you can do to give yourself a better credit. Just because you're sprinkled doesn't mean you're getting the max credits. So it's a good question to ask your loss control guy or your agent, hey, I'm sprinkled. Is there anything else I can do to get a better credit? Heat detection, smoke detection. Again, if you're not sprinkled, I always recommend these, especially if you're kind of out of town, if you're in a rural setting. I always recommend doing heat or smoke detection. Isolating your dangerous operation against your finished goods, your operations from your finished goods is always a great idea. Don't use frame construction in new buildings. I know we're in the lumber business, but at the same time, there's a classification of operations. And the worst, the most expensive one, is what they call frame, obviously wood. Frame, unprotected, no hydrants, manufactured. So you're going to get the highest rate thrown at you if your frame, no hydrants near you, not sprinkled, and you're a manufacturer. And then the further you move away from that, obviously getting away from frame is a good start. Bringing hydrants on your property helps, sprinkling helps. You're always going to be a manufacturer of some sort. So that's where you want to start slowly to get. As you build new buildings, we want to separate our buildings. So as you guys, that's another reason you want to contact your agent every once in a while. When you're coming up with new occupancies, building a new building, making changes to your operation. You want to separate your buildings by 100 feet if you can. I've got a customer that has 3 different carriers on his property. And one carrier charges them a $1.85 rate on the one operation, on the one building. And he gets 2 other buildings that are in the sub-40, sub-60-cent range. And if he didn't do that, if he didn't have this building separated, they'd all be with that $1.85 rate person. So there's some advantages to separating your buildings and maybe going with a couple different carriers. Obviously, adding a security system with motion, door, cameras are really inexpensive nowadays, so it's coming a long way from where it was a few years ago. But security systems do a lot for credits. All right, so again, long-term, preparing for loss prevention visits and underwriter visits. What are they going to be looking for in my property? How can I prepare for that? They're really looking for 2 different things. Do I want to write this account? Do I want to write this operation? And if I do, what kind of a rate do I really want to charge? So the first is a hard decision. Am I going to write it? And then what am I going to do? And that's called rating. They're just using a series of debits and credits to determine whether to quote it and then how much, how aggressive they want to be. So some credits, obviously just like your bank accounts, the good things you do, come from sprinkling, good town classes, good building construction. And then there's some things that are somewhat subjective, housekeeping, attitude, things like that, but they do count. When I do an underwriting visit, I would have a sheet of paper on both sides, and the left side was all the things I liked, on the right side was all the things I hated. And this better be longer than this, right? Pretty simple. Again, some people always ask me, hey, Kevin, if I add another fire extinguisher over there, how much will that save me? Not everything you do will give you an immediate impact on saving. So sometimes it's just the right thing to do. Again, they're going to give you debits for all the things that scare you, credit for all the things that makes the underwriter comfortable. So as the person's walking through, I think we say it later on the slide deck, but as they're walking through, if they don't ask something that you do, if you do something awesome in your operation, you go, hey, you know what? It's an opportunity for you to brag about all the things you do to keep from having claims, having fires, having losses. So before they get there, what can we do? What can we do before the guy even shows up? Check out your own Dun & Bradstreet. So they're going to run a financial on you to check out your financials. So run your own Dun & Bradstreet and see how that stacks up. There may just be some, it's just a credit check. Just make sure that there aren't mistakes in it that will hurt you. Obviously, look over your loss runs. Make sure you have a copy of your loss runs. Check out your website. I had a customer up in Ohio that kept on getting declinations. I was sending it out to the market, and they kept on declining the account. And I finally went back and started pushing back on them. They said, well, we don't write accounts that fix lawnmowers or do rental. My guy doesn't do that. And they said, it says it right on his website, lawnmower repair and rental tools. He doesn't do any of those things. So make sure your website truly depicts what you have. You know, another thing on websites, that same customer with the $30 million loss, he thought it'd be really cool if he put that on his website. And so he pulls his website up, it shows his building level to the ground. There's like two little things sticking out. It's a $30 million loss, right? He thought it was great. Until I started marketing and all the carriers came back and saw that picture and they're like, no way, we don't want anything to do with that. So sometimes what you put on your website could have a direct impact on your underwriting. Deductibles. Know why you picked your deductible. So I picked a $5,000 deductible for my house. And I just figured that I'd never turn in a $2,000 deductible. Just make sure you understand why you pick the deductible you have. Don't pick a $2,500 deductible if you'd never turn it in. You might as well take the little bit of credit and a little bit of savings. If you say, hey, my threshold's about, I mean, 25 grand will hurt me or 10 grand will hurt me, and that's a good place to put your deductible. Good reason for shopping. So if an underwriter or loss prevention person comes through, sometimes they'll ask you, why are you shopping your account? What's your motive here? The last thing they want to hear is, well, I shop it every 3 years, whether I need to or not. You just told them that you're wasting their time. So when I go in and they would say, hey, I shop my account every 3 years. I give the new numbers to my agent. He matches them. And I haven't moved my account in 15 years. I leave. There's no reason for me to be there. So make sure you have a reason for shopping your account. Hey, I'm getting non-renewed. Hey, I've got a 40% increase. Hey, I don't like my agent anymore. Whatever it happens to be. Google Earth. Google Earth your own property. Make sure it makes sense. That's the very first thing they're going to do is pull up your property on Google Earth and look what the surrounding area is, see how much stuff you have right next to all your buildings. That may not be accurate. Those things can be 3 or 4 years old. So make sure you're looking at those things or give him a current picture while he's there. Give him something to work off of. So what are they looking, what are some other things they're looking for that are subjective? Attitude. Inflexibility of recommendations. One of the things I used to always say when I walk in is I'd talk to them about heat detection. I'd say, hey, did you ever think about putting heat detection in? I just wanted to see their face. I wanted to see how they'd express themselves after I made that recommendation. If they'd immediately fight back and go, how much would it save me? Or just give me a bunch of attitude. I knew his ability to work with me is going to be pretty slim. If he wrote it down and said, hey, that's a great idea. I never thought about that. That was the kind of customer I wanted. You got to watch what kind of comments you make. I've had a lot of, these are all comments that I've heard over the years. Haven't had a fire in 30 years. Steel doesn't burn. That's why I buy insurance, so I can fix this stuff. And my favorite one is the fire department is extremely familiar with us. It always kind of scares you a little bit. So what they're looking for when they're walking through your property, just some quick things. Sawdust uses oil soak in the garage. A lot of times that's littered with cigarette butts in the maintenance garage. There's cigarette butts in there too with the oil. The hydraulic units are usually catch with sawdust. Sometimes there's garbage in there, cigarette butts in there. Anything homemade. Underwriters hate homemade items. You know, if it looks professional, it's nice, but homemade wood burners, just machinery overall should not be homemade. They're looking for distances between buildings. You actually see them stepping things off. You're not going to understand everything they're doing. Sometimes it looks like they're a little bit lost. Are you doing fire door maintenance? Are you doing annual testing? Is there stuff underneath the fire door to keep it from coming down? So they're looking for things like that. They're going to review your employee manuals. They want to know if you have policies. If you have a disciplinary procedure for smoking. And if your safety director manages it, does he have any teeth? Does he can actually make any effect on them? If you're doing self-inspections, are they written? Or is it just kind of informal? I just walk around. Is there a written process done after you do your own self-inspections? And then does that written process go to the maintenance crew, and they do work orders off of it? So you can take these little things. You know, a lot of people just ask you the little questions. Do you have a self-inspection program? Yes. You can answer yes. But it's always better if you're expanding upon it and telling them exactly how you do your self-inspections and what you're doing. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for somebody that's doing a little bit above the base. That's how you get in that top 5%. Looking for blocked exit doors, cluttered exits, security lighting, fencing, separation of hazardous processes, basically putting them in different areas. You're looking at construction of the buildings. That's a big thing for them. Water protection, how close it is. Are we maintaining our hydrants? Anybody have hydrants on your property that are yours? You guys flush those yourselves? Good. You should be flushing your own hydrants if they're on your property. They're your responsibility. Every time you exercise those, it greases the stem. That way you don't have them snapping in the wintertime. Do we shut down our power at night in some of the buildings? Do we have actual loading and unloading procedures? Where do the drivers stand when they're being unloaded and loaded? I just had a death in southern Ohio two weeks ago. And a guy tried to sneak behind a loader, and the guy backed right over him and crushed him, killed him. So just having these little, that's a $1 million claim. It'll be very hard to place that risk. Having these little procedures makes a big difference. They're really looking for ignition sources. So again, they're looking for housekeeping and then ignition sources. So signs of smoking is the biggest thing. Carriers don't mind if lightning strikes your building. No big deal. If something happens where you have a loss, the electrical panel blows up, surge comes in, they're not really upset about that. What they hate is when you have preventable losses like smoking, cutting, welding. That's when they get really mad. So making sure that, especially if they knew about it. So signs of cigarettes laying all around the place, extinguished on the ground. We want to make sure our people are using cigarette butt cans and they're actually enforcing it. Sometimes it's drivers. You have a driver dropping something off, they just flick their cigarettes. If you ever look in front of you walk up to any restaurant and they have mulch outside, there's little burn piles, little burn marks all through the mulch from people just throwing their cigarettes down. So they're looking for that as they walk up. We want to make sure there's butt cans available for them. They don't like open burning. If you have wood burners, make sure that, that's what I mean by the screen on the top of the exhaust stack. You should have a screen on the top of that, catch any embers coming out of it. Torpedo heaters are obviously looked at on a negative basis. If you have them, they should be really clean and only used on an emergency basis. Wood burner condition. You always want a clear space around your wood burner. You don't want tools. And you got to think about the tools that you have stacked up against your wood burner. Think about a shovel. A shovel has a metal sleeve that goes into the wood handle, right? And you shove that in and you're cleaning out the wood burner. All the embers end up into the handle. And then they take the handle and they put it up against the building. If I had three fires from that exact situation where they put the handle up against the building and they caught the wall on fire. A lot of people cook. They dry their gloves. They dry their hats. They put a lot of stuff on top of the wood burners. And obviously they catch on fire if they leave them there long enough. They're looking for household appliances. They hate household appliances. Toaster ovens. You ever see, walk into a break room and there's seven microwaves lined up on the wall? Well, only two microwaves can go on a circuit. It'll overload a 20 amp circuit. So two microwaves per circuit, that's all you can do. And you'll see seven along the line. And then they're plugged into a multi-strip like this thing right here, one of those power strips. That thing's rated for 600 watts. So it certainly can't take one microwave, let alone four. So you just have to know and think about these things as you're setting your facilities up. Hot plates, I've seen hot plates all through. We don't really want household anything. I see coffee pots at people's workstations. All that stuff should be in a break room because people just forget to turn it off. The other thing is, you know, everybody has the cordless battery, the cordless drills. They're all 20 amps and 30 amp drill charging stations, right? If you leave the batteries in those overnight, they catch on fire. A lot of times those things catch on fire. So they should be pulling the batteries out of those at night before they go home. But I walk through facilities all the time and there's just rows and all the batteries are plugged in, ready to go for that day. So we want to make sure that your people are pulling the batteries out of those at night before they go to bed and before they go home. Personal heaters, again, we don't want those in there because people leave them on. And a lot of times, if you're in an office environment, sometimes it's 14-gauge wire. It's not good enough to handle that. Talked about the multi-centers. They're going to be looking at building maintenance. Do we have broken trusses? Whenever you have to replace or repair a base cord truss, there's a bunch of procedures you have to go through to make sure it holds up and it's able to hold the snow load that could come through. You got to go 3 feet on both sides. It's got to be the same species. It's got to be bolted instead of screwed. There's just some procedures that have to go into place whenever you repair those. They're looking for old roofs, leaks. When I walk through the property, I see water on the ground. I immediately think the roof's bad and I want to put it on ACV, or actual cash value. or exclude it. Looking for mission fascia boards, so that it's that board that goes across the front, really where the gutter would go. When that's missing, that gives the wind the ability to fly up underneath it and peel the roof back. It gives you a nice roof loss. I look for roof panels that are flapping in the wind. I see a lot of gutters with trees in them. And really, you might think, well, who cares? Who cares if there's a little vegetation or some leaves in my gutter? What you're sending out is, I care about my machinery. It's not like people look at one thing and do a really good job in one area and do a really sloppy job in another area. It's usually consistent. So if they're not taking care of their building outside, they're probably not taking care of their building and electricals and machinery inside. So it just gives you an idea of their culture. I can tell a lot about a property when I pull up to the drive, and I'm sitting there in my car, I can pretty much tell whether I'm right in that count or not. It's pretty quick. Are they taking care of their lightning protection? Are they watching it, taking a look at it? I love this picture. This is actually a pellet manufacturer right here. You can see he's got bungee straps on both sides of his pelletizer. They want to know about your PM programs. Is it documented? Is it an electronic program? Or do you get a work order punched out for you every day? Or is it just as needed and we just fix things as they break? Are you doing oil analysis on the air compressors or any equipment? Are you sending the oil out? Fluorescent light fixtures. You guys ever walk through a property and you see one big long 8-foot bulb's on and one's just sitting there flickering? What that means is that second bulb, the starter, is in there just churning and churning. It's kind of like leaving your starter on your car, just churning and churning and churning. It's trying to start that dead bulb. Well, eventually that ballast, hopefully we're getting away from these a little bit, but eventually that ballast overheats and starts dripping black stuff that's on fire. I had a fire in my hardware store because of that exact thing. So best thing to do is just pull a dead bulb. You're not getting any light out of it anyhow, and it shuts down the ballast and then change it with an electronic ballast. So if you have half of a light fixture burned out, pull the bulb. What are we doing as far as maintenance on our mobile equipment? Cleanings, greasings, things like that. It's nice to be able to talk about those things, about what you're doing. And do we have battery disconnects on our mobile equipment? So all of our loaders, all of our Bobcats, all the machinery we have should have a battery disconnect. And all that is, it's just a knife. Remember the old cartoons that have a knife switch? And all it does is kill the negative side of the battery. We just want to kill the power to those things so they don't burn up in the middle of the night. It also keeps kids from stealing them and running around your neighborhood with them. They're going to be looking for housekeeping. And not so much. So when I would do a tour, the first thing I would do is I would walk the perimeter of the property and stick my head out the doors, and then I would slowly walk up and down the middle. You always want to let that underwriter go where he wants to go. But I did that because everybody cleans the dead center. It's the nooks and the crannies. I want to see what they do, cleaning those. How close are the mulch piles to the building? Sawdust on the roof, because obviously if you get a bunch of sawdust or mulch or whatever it happens to be on the roof of a building, it snows, it rains, it freezes. All of a sudden, it's a pretty heavy weight, and that's how you get collapses. Are they cleaning the dust out inside electrical panels? Do we paint zones for electricals and fire extinguishers? Just nice to know that we don't put anything there because there's a big painted area. And then how are we cleaning? What are our cleaning schedules for our mobile equipment? Exposures. Exposures are things that are next to you. It's just nice to know what they are and be able to explain, because the underwriter might say, hey, who's in that brown building? Who's in the building behind you? Because they're an exposure. You have railroad tracks that run behind you. A lot of times a rail car will send what they call clinkers. And it's just a little round ball. And if you ever did a slingshot, they're really good for the slingshots. But they're a little ball that comes off the tracks, and they're usually red hot. And they land in the brush behind your property, and they can creep up to your fence and basically catch your stock on fire. So that's another reason you clear the area. Are we in residential areas? Do we have graffiti all over our property? Do we have beat down wire on the fence from people climbing over and under? I insured a property in Pittsburgh that as we were walking around, I saw mud tracks on the lumber, and then the three barbed wires were all beat down. So I stuck my head over the fence, looked down in the little, kind of went down to the hill, and there was a beautiful cabin down there made out of Trex wood. So they were coming up and grabbing all the Trex lumber and built a really nice cabin. Again, so it was a little bit of a GL exposure too. If the kids would have gotten hurt, they would have sued them. Special hazards, we really don't have a lot in our industry. Obviously, some of you guys have dust bag houses. There's protection features for those. They're going to look at that. Some of us have kilns. Flammables are pretty minimal in our world, but we want to make sure they're being stored properly. Pellet operations are a big turnoff. How often are we doing our turnings on our mulch piles? Why? What's the schedule and why are we picking that? Are we using some kind of new technology or are we just using our gut instinct? Motor vents. So a lot of times when you walk through a property, they're looking for, so you ever look at a motor vent, there's little grooves on it, little channels? That's how they breathe. That's how they let the heat off. If those are filled and packed with sawdust or mulch or whatever it happens to be, those motors can't breathe. Number one, you're going to lose the lifespan of that motor, but you can also have a fire from those things. They're going to look for electricals, open-ended wiring, open boxes, open doors. Sometimes where the breaker was, they pulled one out and didn't replace it, so now they have a gap there. They're looking for fuses on top of on panels. Really, we don't want Billy Bob or anybody changing fuses. We want to make sure that they're putting the right size fuse in the right box. So it's not only a work comp issue, but we want to make sure they're putting the right size fuse in there. Renewable fuses are kind of going away, but they're a fuse you used to take apart. So I just walk through the parts room and just look for renewable fuses. You unscrew it, drop a new link in, and screw it back together. Well, you can put whatever link you want into them. So we try to get rid of those. We really don't want to use some renewable fuses. They're looking for block panels, dust-covered boxes, dust-covered motors. Then we'll look at your thermographic reports. I don't know if you guys started getting into thermographics, but it's when they come through and they do a scan of all your electricals and they tell you where any heat buildups. So therefore, you're wasting power and losing money. So if you haven't done a thermographic scan, I would really highly recommend you get a thermographic scan done at your properties. It's a good thing to stick in that insurance resume we talked about. And do we have surge suppression on the main feed? Something to protect the surge coming in from the city. They look for extension cords. Everybody hates extension cords. A lot of times they're stapled. They're used for permanent. Extension cords are really just kind of a construction tool. That's how they should be used. Nothing more than 90 days. They look for household extension cords, the little thin white ones and the little thin brown ones. Hate those. In fact, OSHA will give you a hard time over those too. Damaged and repaired. Obviously, everybody's put a little nick in extension cord. You put some electric tape on it. But it's when they've been coiled and repaired 16 times, the ground lug's missing. Those are the ones to get rid of. And, I mean, they're cheap enough. Just got new ones. They don't like them run underneath the carpets or taped down on a permanent basis. Obviously, this is kind of a temporary thing. Pulled ground lugs. Remember, some of these underwriters are looking for, you know, you might say, hey, I just had a guy walk through a property. He doesn't write the inland marine. He doesn't write the forklifts and loaders. But he kept on looking at each one, and he kept on asking the guy about the fire extinguisher. And finally, I said, hey, you're not right in the inland marine, you're a property-only guy. He goes, I look at everything, because it tells me about the culture. So sometimes they're asking about stuff, and you go, what's he care? He's looking for culture more than anything else. Fire extinguishers, they're going to look at the fire extinguishers. You ever go to a gas station, and you walk up, and where are the fire extinguishers at the gas station? They're in between the pumps. So if it's on fire, do you want to go in between the pumps to get the fire extinguisher? So just think about where your fire extinguishers are, especially at your fuel filling stations. Sometimes the area is just so cut up and you got ramps and machinery all over the place. Really what you want the fire extinguisher by the door so I can walk to the door, turn around, look at the fire, grab the fire extinguisher and decide if I want to go in. And that way I've got a clean exit. So you may have the fire extinguishers in some really weird spots. You might just want to look around and think about where you have them. And then when the loss control guy asks you about it, you can actually have a reason on why you put the fire extinguishers where you have them. I love to ask the question because people just said, I don't know, it's just where I stuck them. It's nice to have a reason. Are they charged? Are they blocked? Are they inspected? So you have a little provision in your policy called a protective condition. And if you're a sprinkler property, it tells you that you have to call the insurance company if you shut your sprinkler system down. Because if you don't, and your sprinkler system's down, your building burns down, they don't have to pay you. Same thing with the fire extinguisher. Every one of you probably have a protective condition for fire extinguishers. And that's not just being charged, but that having their annual tag on. So in theory, anybody ever let their fire extinguisher annual run out and somebody said, hey, you need to get those inspected? They could actually deny a claim if your fire extinguishers are over a year old. So you just want to make sure that there's a reason for that. And doing training, I talked a little bit about, a lot of people don't know how to use a fire extinguisher or what to do. We do a lot of hand-on-hand fire extinguisher training. I'm amazed how many people pick up a fire extinguisher, go to use it, and it's a dud. Still reading good. It shows in the green. We're good to go. It's a dud. It just happens. And they lock up. They have no idea what to do. They have no idea where the next fire extinguisher is. So it's good to go through that training and talk to them about those things. And then a lot of loaders and operators have a fire extinguisher on them, but it's usually behind the seat, underneath their lunch, underneath their raincoat, kind of buried behind you. So it's good to know if it's actually mounted somewhere. Sprinkler system, this is what they're looking to see if it's tested. Sometimes they're inadvertently shut off. Sometimes you can't even get to the sprinkler system or get to the valves. Does somebody have a working knowledge of them? A lot of times they're locked. So somebody should have a key so they should be able to shut the thing off. A lot of times, fire, your sprinkler heads are an accidental trip. Somebody throws a chair or something happens, and you knock a head off. You wouldn't be able to shut it off because you don't need that thing. It slings. The first 2 minutes is a black, nasty mess. So you want to be able to get to the fire or that sprinkler riser and shut it off. So if you have a sprinkler system, make sure somebody knows where the keys are or how to shut it down. Talked about the impairment program. There should be a program in place so you call the carrier if your sprinkler system's down. It's not a great place to hang all your shirts and hang piping up on top of your sprinkler piping. The head should be cleaned. It should be designed for your hazard. Not all. So obviously, the sprinkler system in here, probably a 0.15. So all that means is that it's not designed as heavily as it would be in a sawmill, right? It's going to have a bigger, robust system for a heavy occupancy. So if you buy a building and you walk in and it's sprinkled, you're like, great, this is great. But it may not be designed for your hazard. It's nice to know the supply, the volume, and the pressure for that. And are you taking care of the fire pump? Anybody have fire hoses in, you know, the big old round hoses? Anybody have those in their properties? If you do, just understand, it's better to check with the fire department and have those things pulled than leave them in. Number one, you pay an annual fee to service it and keep it up to date. But also, if you're going to use those, OSHA requires you to go through a litany of tests. So you better check with the fire department. If they say they won't use them, just pull them out. Hotworks. It's probably the biggest buzzword. Hotworks is anything you do that can create a spark. And that's cutting, welding, grinding, soldering. And it's when you do that in your property. If you take it outside and do it in the backyard or in the middle of the parking lot, no big deal. You don't have to go through this procedure. But you want to make sure that you have a system in place for hotworks. And it's usually, it's normal stuff. It's wetting down the area, sweeping up the area, having a fire watch available, watching it after the fact. It's the number one cause of loss in our world. We'll take our cutting torches, any kind of propane, things like that, and store them in the maintenance garage. We don't think those things out in the general area. We want to make sure that if you use subcontractors, the subcontractors are following your hot work procedures as well. And you want to keep your old tags as evidence. I have a carrier that won't write you unless you can show 6 months of use of hot works. You got to be able to show that you've been using the hot works for 6 months or else they won't even write you. And a flashing light's another way. So the idea is it's a bright color tag and you tie it to the area you're welding. And as everybody walks by, they see the tag and they go, I don't see anything smoking, and they keep moving. It involves everybody in your hot work program. And the flashing light just is a good reminder. Fire department coordination. It's great to bring your fire department in. Make sure who's the fire department in charge. Sometimes you'll get five responding departments, four responding departments, and then sometimes they'll sit out there and fight about who's in charge, who has authority. Just make sure that's all cleared up on the front end. When an underwriter comes through, you want to make sure that you know the distance to the fire department. You've got to plan with their emergency response plan. Bringing in, having drills and bringing them in for those is great. Knowing what the response time is, where the closest water supply is. Making sure that their hoses fit your hydrants. I've had situations where it was a different department, came in, tried to use what they call a stork fitting on the front of a fire hydrant, and it was a completely different thread pattern. And they lost 20 minutes trying to get that off and get their lines on it. So making sure those things are set up on the front end. Is there a pole disconnect to shut the power down to your operation in case there's a fire? It's just a way to shut the power down away from your operation. That way they can feel comfortable going in. Otherwise, they're in a way around for the power company to shut the power off. Do they have Class A for foam? So if you guys have ever had a mulch fire and you put water on it, what happens? It runs to the outside and it runs down. It doesn't break the surface tension of the mulch or the sawdust, whatever it happens, the chips, whatever it happens to be. It'll hit the top of the water and flow off. The only way to break that surface tension is through Class A foam. So you want to make sure your fire department uses Class A foam or some type of foam to hose on there first, and then that breaks the surface tension and allows you to get down. The picture showed it earlier. The hot spot was kind of halfway down in the mulch pile. So it's going to take a little while for that water to get down to it. So that's why Class A foam is such an advantage. They're going to ask a lot about what kind of early detection do we have. Do we have any kind of security, smoke, fire, cameras, night watchmen? You got to watch dogs. A lot of people like having dogs on the property. It can also be a GL exposure. Kids break on your property if you have, it just kind of depends on the dog. Sometimes boil operators work night and day, they work 24 hours. And then we talked about fire rover. Do we have contingency plans? Do we have backup motors, belts, and boilers? Do we have a friendly competitor we can go use and work with and help us out? Is any of our equipment made in Italy? Is it going to take 6 months to get, you know, it's the nice thing about having a roto chopper here in the U.S. any of the colorizers, any of the machines we're using is overseas. It's going to take forever for it to get over here. We have backup generators, air compressor rental agreements. It's great to have an air compressor rental agreement, but if they come in and drop off the air compressor and you spend a day and a half plumbing to try to get that thing hooked up, it's always nice to have it set up on the front end so you don't have to do it at the minute. It's kind of like if you have a generator at your house, it's already nice to have the electrical set up so I can just plug it in and you're up and running. You don't have to sit there and rewire everything. Again, lease agreements for loaders in case you have a loader that goes out, and plans for weekend outages. So how can I prepare for an underwriting visit? Have somebody walk with them. Don't stick them with Siri. So I've had some very incredible guys walk me around properties. So you want to make sure that he's very knowledgeable. My recommendation is that the owner can go and somebody in charge of maintenance or operations to go along with them. Somebody that knows the culture, able to say, yes, I can do things, and somebody able to explain the depth of what they do from a PM program, things like that. When they call us up an appointment, you want to ask them what you can do to gather on the front end. You want to say, hey, what can I gather on the front end to make your trip more beneficial? They may say no, but you still want to make this packet. We're talking about our insurance resume. It's a packet of things, and we'll go through it in depth. Make sure the person at the front desk is nice to them. I've had situations where I go into a place, and I go in, and sometimes they make me wait outside. I sit in the lobby. Sometimes they're late to come in and get me. If you're going to make the underwriter wait 20 minutes after an appointment, is he going to be in a real good mood to write your account? Is he going to be real excited about giving you lots of credits? You want to pull them in. You want to take them in the back room. You want to give them coffee and water and put them in a conference room. Even if you're going to be late, just communicate with them. Ask them how they want to handle the process. Sometimes they want to sit and have some conversation. Sometimes they just want to get right to it. Ask them how they want to handle it. Take notes. Again, you don't have to agree. Just be open to their ideas. Again, I used it. I just did it as a test. I used heat detection just to test the guests. They may not follow the flow of the process. They may go where they want to go. They may have a plan for how they want to do it. Sometimes they're just testing you to see if it's okay if they go where they want to go. Again, don't just stick them with anybody. Warn the operators. Any kind of loader operators, we want to make sure that they know we have visitors coming through today, and it's okay to stick them, you know, stick a high vis vest on them. Again, let them walk where they want to walk. The only thing I would say about safety equipment, it's okay to give them things, but just don't make them wear a bunch of things that you don't make everybody else in the plant wear. So if you don't wear high vis vest, hard hats, safety glass, all those things, don't make the inspector wear all those things unless he wants to. It's okay to have conversations with the employees as you're walking around. It speaks to the culture. They did an operation, they made wood barrel staves down in Western PA in the south side. And the guy walked around the whole property, over 100 employees, never said hi to one employee the whole way when he walked around. Never said anything to anybody. He just told me a lot about his culture and how he treats his employees. And if those employees don't like him, are they going to be really careful with the operation? Are they going to care about the facility very much? Just want to make sure that you got a good buy-in that way. Again, during that walkthrough, we'll make sure if we're doing any hot works, we're going to make sure you're using a tag. Make sure the security lighting's. I used to go to a property either early in the morning or late at night when I'd do an inspection the next day just to see if the security lighting was on, just to see if the gates were closed, see if anybody was hanging around. Again, we want to make sure there's good, clear space around the buildings. We don't want welding carts outside of the maintenance. We want to make sure the tanks are secured and chained up. Just simple things you normally have. Fluorescent lights, no torpedoes that day. Walk around, do obviously electrical inspections. Make sure your fire extinguishers are up and clean. And again, fire extinguishers can be there, but if they're covered with dust and grease and nasty, sends a great message. Okay, talk about that insurance packet. This is all the things that should go into your packet that you can hand him, just a little folder to hand him whenever he shows up to do the inspection. Any PM programs you have, any used hot work tags, fire department contact information, the distance, updates to roofs, water department name and number, size of the main, distance to the property, pressure and GPM if available. The ages of the buildings, and again, the roof updates are always something that everybody has to know for our underwriting. Old loss prevention reports and what you've done, copy of self-inspection checklist, map of the property, where your buildings are, which buildings we have, preferably numbered. Copies of old sprinkler trip test reports, fire pump test reports, and the alarm service reports. Copy your emergency response plan, any kind of safety manuals, employee manuals, any written programs, your housekeeping, your EPM, old thermographic reports, and the fact that we actually fixed the things in the thermographic reports. like, again, like I said, I could tell about a property when I pulled up on the outside and took a look at the property. I could tell whether it was one I wanted. So the outside should look just as nice as the inside. So again, make sure the gutter's clean. There's no garbage, no cigarette butts laying around. It's a good day. The day before an inspection is a good day to walk around and make sure there's no cigarette butts anywhere on the ground. Look in the corners. Again, good thing is to have them turn down the radios. That's a great, just, I've been in places where it's just so loud you can't even have a conversation because the radios are jamming so loud. So the bottom line, this is really just a job interview. It's a first date. So you want to come off, we want to show our best. Right from the very beginning, you show them what we're in the top 5%. Things I didn't put in my PowerPoint. I'm going to run through them really quick. But the carrier never said anything about this. The last loss prevention guy never said anything. Everybody has a different specialty. Everybody has a different level of experience. So one person may catch something 1 year and 5 years go by and it's been the same way and somebody else comes in and says, oh, you need to do this. Not uncommon. Stock throughput. So it's been around for a few years. It's one way to lower some of your costs is you're inland marine, your loaders and forklifts. That policy does not have to be the same as your property policy. You can put, there's a lot of carriers that just write inland marine. So it's sometimes an inexpensive way just to cut costs and put your inland marine on a separate policy. Same thing with stock. It's called a stock throughput policy. So you can put all your stock on its own separate policy. They don't have a lot of exposure. Usually it's outside. There's minimal hazards to it. So you can get a little better rate on stock by putting on its own policy. The best deals that I see from my customers when I go out, things that I just can't beat, it's whenever the agent has a relationship with a local carrier, whether it's Hartford or whoever it happens to be, they have a great relationship, and they do them a favor. So make sure that you're asking your agent, hey, who's your number one carrier? And if you're not with them, ask them to quote, ask them to take a look at it. At least you have a backup plan. Brag about what you do. We talked about don't wait for them to ask. Pull the keys from the equipment. Talked about protective conditions. Pull your own safer report. So your DOT runs as a thing on the website called your safer report. It shows all your out of service. Has more to do with auto, but everybody pulls it. So find out what your safer report is and find out if it's accurate or not. Midterm marketing. Somebody will call you up and go, hey, I want to market your account. Well, I don't renew till January. Well, I'll market it now. There's a 3% hit ratio. So underwriters know there's a 3% chance they're going to write an account off of your X date, off of your normal renewal date. And then if you do that and you don't move it, then come renewal time, they're going to get your account again, and they're going to go, yeah, this guy's driving me crazy, and they won't even take a look at it. So think real hard about doing midterm renewals. Be green. Make sure you're telling the right story to underwriters and loss control people. You think about the millennials that are coming on and different people to be doing our underwriting soon. They all have this philosophy. There's actually a normal philosophy out there that logging, lumbering, everything we do is bad. Bad for the environment. We're horrible people. And we all know that forest management is the right way to do things. It's the right way to take care of things. So make sure that you're educating them as they come through. Understand selling price. So selling price is a feature on your policy. And you go, well, you know what, Kevin, if I have a fire in my mulch, I just sold all my mulch, no big deal. Well, you're not going to get selling price on that. You're going to get actual cash value on it. You're going to get whatever you have in it. You're not going to get the profit off of it. So some people say, well, I don't need business interruption because I have selling price on my policy. That's only for what you have sold but not yet delivered. So if you have a pile and it's ready to go, it's sold, it just hasn't been delivered yet, and that catches on fire, yeah, you get the profit off of it. But if it's just your pile out there and it's not sold, then no, you're just going to get actual cash value and you're going to be frustrated. That's why you need business interruption. Respond to loss control recommendations in 30 days. Again, it goes back to that building rapport with your carrier. Push back on declinations. If your agent comes back and says, hey, yeah, I sent it out to four markets, they all declined. Why? What was the reason? Is it something we can fix? Are they mistaken? Was it a mistake? That type of thing. Last thing, expiration dates of 7-1 and 1-1. 7-1 and 1-1, sorry, July 1st and January 1st are the worst dates just because 90% of people have their renewal dates then. So if you're an underwriter and you have stacks for your 1-1s and stacks for your 7-1s, so those are the worst 2 months to have your renewal. So if you can set your renewal dates different months, if they get a submission in and it's a sloppy submission, handwritten or not enough information or things not filled out in it, and it's 7-1 or 1-1, they're going to look at that and go, no thanks. They really won't give it the time of day. Where if it's done in March or April or some other date, they may spend a few more minutes. They may call the agent up and say, hey, fix these things, and I'll look at it. They'd be more inclined to give it a little more time. Make sense? Just because we're out of time, I'm just going to jump right to it. Any questions from this? Yeah.
So a lot of us work with you know, large piles of like sawdust or mulch that are stored outdoors. You mentioned sprinklers a few times. Does that include ground sprinklers as well as overhead sprinklers?
No, that's a great question. So there are a couple different types of sprinklers. Some sprinklers are used for log piles to keep the logs soft so they can chip easier and you can bark them easier. But those aren't, they're not going to be credited for mulch piles. Now that Range Rover, not Range Rover, Fire Rover, it is, that can be credited. So you can get some credit for that thing. Now, it, what it does, it spans an area and looks for that, and then it does shoot a fire extinguishment media right on it. And then the other one's the where it just looks for heat anomalies and it'll text you and say, hey, you've got a problem, you need to turn this pile. So, yeah, all the sprinkler stuff is just for buildings. Yeah? Great. No. So it's the insurance appraisal tells you what it would take to replace that screen, this table, the computer at new. That's going to tell you what it would cost to replace all that stuff at new. The fair market appraisal is going to tell you what you could sell your, it includes land. I guess that's the easiest thing. It includes land and some value of the name of the business. So if you're going to sell your operation, that's what that, and they can, that group does the same thing too. So they can do a market appraisal and they can do an insurance appraisal. Is that what you meant? Yeah. Depends on how big the operation is, whether they have a safety director. So if they have a safety, if a safety director usually falls on them, I'll tell you that nobody knows all this stuff. Nobody, no safety person, you know, if we talk to a safety person, they're really more concerned about workers' comp than they are about fire prevention. And they're not thinking about insurance. So it's this is so far outside of the realm of what they do. So it really boils down to the owner making sure it's an integral part of their monthly meetings and when you guys are sitting around talking about things. Because lately, it's becoming a bigger and bigger thing off the bottom line. It's a bigger number for everybody between workers' comp and the property. So mostly it's the maintenance person who does all the fire prevention stuff, taking care of the boxes. Because everything that's wrong from a property perspective falls back on the maintenance person. They're the ones going to have to fix everything. Yeah. Maintenance manager, correct. Yep. Good? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to take a break. It's sponsored by Pro Ampac, so thank you, Pro Ampac. And we're going to be back in here in 30 minutes at 3:30.
I'm going to go to the next one. Thank you.